Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
Welcome back to the Ginsburg Tapes. I'm your host, Lauren Moxley. It has been a time for me here in DC, y'all. We're talking like back to back to back 80 plus hour work weeks. So there's no new episode today, but I'm going to replay a slightly new and improved version of the trailer to the Ginsburg Tapes, which I see, and if anyone's going to agree with me, it's going to be you TGT listeners, as more of an inspirational mashup jam session slash Ruth Bader Ginsburg opus, if you will. It quickly explains why I'm doing this project, and then it mashes up some of the most epic moments from Ginsburg's oral arguments in the Supreme Court in the 1970s. Listen to it before your next job interview, your next big test, your next big performance. Share it with a friend who might need a little pick-me-up. Because what this podcast is all about, at some level, is the ability of one brave person to change the world. And maybe I'm projecting, but I think that we could all use a little bit of that in our lives right now. The Supreme Court has been recording oral arguments for more than 60 years. And for the past year and a half, I've been spending all of my free time thinking about six of those recordings. Six tapes for six cases that took place between 1972 and 1978. 1972 is really not that long ago. My all-time favorite movie, The Godfather, had just come out in theaters. My mom was 14 years old. But while viewed in the proper scope of human history, 1972 was practically yesterday, it is jarring, and sometimes to me at least, shocking, to learn about the ways in which women's status under American law was radically different in 1972 than it is today. In 1972, women were effectively excluded from jury service in many states. Male military service members were automatically entitled to dependents' benefits, and female military service members doing the same jobs were not. Men were automatically preferred to women in the administration of estates. Widowed mothers were entitled to special benefits for caring for minor children, but widowed fathers were not. By 1978, things had changed. What happened in those 6 years? Well, a lot of things happened, but one big thing happened. Ruth Bader Ginsburg and the ACLU Women's Rights Project. And in recent years, Ginsburg has become a cultural icon. There are movies, there are books, there are shirts, there are mugs, there are Halloween costumes, there are rap songs. On RBG's birthday this year, hundreds of people gathered outside the Supreme Court to plank like RBG. Hashtag notorious RBG. And in all of this delightful and totally deserved celebration of this badass person, as we collectively cast upon this 86-year-old grandmother, this gangsta feminist reputation, this symbol of grit and take no shit, I think we forget why she is who she is. From 1972 to 1978, Ruth Bader Ginsburg waged a war. A careful, understated, and strategic war, but a war all the same. The goal of the war was straightforward: to prove that laws discriminating on the basis of sex should be held to a higher standard under the U.S. Constitution. And in 6 years, Ginsburg showed, you know what, she honestly taught the Supreme Court, the conservative burger court, about the ways in which American law operated to exclude women, to pigeonhole them, to hold them back, and therefore to hold us all back. She made arguments that had never been made before, and she won over an all-male Supreme Court to her vision of the U.S. Constitution. And we have it all on tape.
Ginsburg, you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice.
If you'd like to lower the lectern, you're quite at liberty to do so.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court.
Now, on the other side of the coin, it can hardly be disputed that most men are not dependent upon their wives.
Women are women and men are men, and you can draw that difference and that difference only.
I suppose, what, 98-99% of military personnel are male?
The majority of women are dependent upon their husbands.
You won't settle for putting Susan B. Anthony on the new dollar.
I think you have no jurisdiction to make that concession, Mrs. Ginsburg. Thank you.
Are women allowed to make contracts when this Constitution was written?
I think the second reason that the appellee seeks to characterize this as a women's rights case is that the cause of women's rights is now a fashionable one, and the appellee seeks to ride on its skirt tails.
In fact, Congress had in view male breadwinners, male heads of household, and the women and children dependent upon them. In practical effect, laws of this quality help to keep women not on a pedestal, but in a cage. These distinctions have a common effect. They help keep woman in her place, a place inferior to that occupied by men in our society. Of course, most anti-female discrimination was dressed up as discrimination favoring the woman.
I know that, but the courts, through help of advocates such of you as you, have been able to see through that, haven't they?
All I ask of our brethren is that they take their feet off our necks.